Hello, everybody. It's George from Ireland, and this is commenting on the death of Andy Tyree. Wearing the cap with a tricolour is actually coincidental. I was thinking of doing a video, put it on, and then this is like next on my list to do, because I was trying to do something the other day, and it cut out after 30 seconds. But Andrew Tyree died on the 16th instant. He shall not be missed. He was a loyalist terrorist leader who was very active in felonious acts against Catholic civilians in the early 1970s. So, yeah, Mr. Tyree, I have to hand it to him, though from the late 90s, he did use his influence to try and work for peace and reconciliation. So he undo some of the crimes that he'd committed. Anyway, he's sort of the end of the era, someone like him passing, someone who was prominent in the Ulster Defence Association in the early days. So the UDA founded 1970, Law Before Violence being its motto. Anyway, he's from a working class Protestant family in Belfast, and he left school in his mid-teens without any qualifications. That was typical back then. You know, in the 1963, only 4% of young people in the United Kingdom went to university. In Northern Ireland, it was lower than the UK average. Anyway, so he grew up in Ballymurphy, which is these days a very heavily Catholic area. In those days, it was Catholic majority, but it wasn't like 99%, as it became by the height of the Troubles. So when the modern Troubles erupted in 1969, there's a lot of sectarian violence. See, the two Christian denominations in Northern Ireland are Protestant and Catholic, and not everybody's sectarian. I mean, even at the worst times, not everyone was like that. Some people still got married. I'm afraid to say that there were a lot of bigots, saying that the other people are evil or whatever, or they support this other terrorist organisation like the UVF or the IRA or whatever. And I've got to be frank that a lot of people did support this organisation or that organisation. And then hate blinds people. People were so enraged. My best friend has been murdered, my sibling or whatever, and I want to hit back. And if I can't find the individual, I don't know which individual did it, I know which side did it, they're all guilty. Okay, maybe not all, but most of them. So, and that attitude takes over. It just brings out the worst in people. But he was forced out of Ballymurphy by the IRA, just as Catholic families, and more Catholics than Protestants, suffered similar sort of treatment from knuckle-dragging loyalist thugs. I'm not saying that all loyalists are like that. Anyway, so although, you know, his family had lived in Ireland for centuries, they seemed to be ethnically Irish, Scots, possibly English. They can be Irish absorption. I think he never called himself Irish. Say he's Ulster as well as British, or perhaps Northern Irish as well as British. So anyway, the UVF was founded in 1966. I know there's the UVF of the 1913 Foundation. People always say 1912 with these murals. It's not actually. It's 1913. Anyhow. So 1966, Gusty Spence founded it, and then it was a terrorist organisation murdering some Catholic men who were not connected to the IRA. You know, John Scully, and I can't remember some of the other victims. And that was when there was almost no IRA threat in the mid-60s. So then the UDA was formed, Ulster Defence Association, and then it really was just men trying to aid the security forces. And I know a guy who was in it, in the Woodvale, that's that Protestant working class district, and he patrolled the street armed with a whistle, simply to blow it and attract attention if they saw any intruder. And he had to patrol the street for an hour a night, and another man take it for another hour, another man take it for another hour, and if they see anybody coming and say, hello, what's your name, why are you here, simply to challenge that person. And this person was a gunman. He was unlikely to answer calmly, but then that turned into, as they would see, counterattacking against the IRA. But then they didn't draw a distinction between the IRA and the Catholic community in general. But then, obviously, if you're a Catholic area suffering these depredations from the loyalist terrorists, you might say, well, the IRA, and eventually the Irish National Liberation Army, the only thing standing in between us and these loyalist monsters, because the Royal Ulster Constabulary is ineffective at preventing it. Now, you know, by the early 90s, Belfast murder rate was half of that of London. And the sectarian threat was not that big. Okay, there were some sectarian murders, it's true. But that was no excuse for terrorism like that. Even in the early 70s, yes, it was bad. But it was like on a level with average American cities at the time. Anyway, so, and then obviously some Protestant might say, well, the security forces are not protecting us sufficiently. We're going to have to throw our weight behind the UVF and the Ulster Defence Association and so on. And then these tit-for-tat sectarian murders, they killed one of ours, we'll slay one of theirs, and so on, terrorizing the terrorists, as they would say it, the UDA, they didn't claim these slayings under the name of Ulster Defence Association. They were, say, Ulster Freedom Fighters. And on that basis, they weren't actually outlawed till Sir Patrick Mayhew was Secretary of State for Northern Ireland in 1992. But Andrew Tyrie became quite well known, and it was certainly an evil person. He was willing to risk his life because the IRA, INLA would want to kill him. But the really important thing that he participated in was the Ulster Workers' Council strike. So the Sunningdale Agreement at the end of 1973, and Brian Faulkner, the last Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, was then leader of the Ulster Unionist Party. There was no PM of Northern Ireland at the time. He met with his Irish counterpart, Republic of Ireland counterpart, Liam Cosgrave, the Taoiseach, and the Prime Minister of the UK, Edward Heath, was there. Sunningdale, just west of London, a civil service training college, thought to be a safe location to hold the talks, agreeing a power-sharing agreement. The Social Democratic and Labour Party, that was the Constitutional Nationalist Party, to share power with the Ulster Unionist Party, a North-South Council, or Council of Ireland, to coordinate on certain policy issues between the Republic and the North, and so on. No reform of the RUC, that was the police, no release of terrorist prisoners, and so on. Now, there were two diametrically different interpretations of where this is going to lead. For Unionists, this was the last concession to nationalism. But for nationalists, it was the first step towards a 32-county republic. Now, they couldn't both be right. But there was the February 1974 election, only 6 weeks after power sharing began, this nationalist Unionist executive. So Sir Edward Heath called that election, which he then lost. Labour administration under Harold Wilson was ushered in. But the majority of Unionists were against this. So half the Ulster Unionist Party and then the Democratic Unionist Party of the Reverend Ian Paisley were against. The SDLP were in favour. Some of the moderate Unionists, the Alliance Party was. Sinn Féin largely wasn't into elections, was just the IRA without the balaclava on. Nevertheless, the executive was going ahead, despite most people in Northern Ireland being against, admittedly for different reasons. Unionists because it was too nationalists, and obviously the IRA because it might sap nationalist belligerence. Anyway, so the Ulster Workers' Council strike was called in May 1974, and it was overwhelmingly Unionist loyalist workers, which meant Protestant in most cases. And in certain things like power stations, although Northern Ireland was maybe 65% Protestant, in power stations more like 85%, and they were able to make sure there wasn't enough electricity and workplaces couldn't function without that. So the executive collapsed after a few days. Brian Faulkner said he was pulling out. They just couldn't do it. So John Hume, leader of the SDLP, law-abiding nationalist, was aghast. The attempt to share office between the two major traditions and to build peace had been shattered. That was it. Glenn Barr was a key strike leader and so on. So the loyalists had a major presence in some of the trades unions. So Tyrie did surprising things, going to lead to Libya to speak to Muammar al-Gaddafi, the brotherly guide of the great Arab Socialist People's Islamic Jamahiriya, Libya. Could he withdraw support for the IRA, throw it behind loyalism? Well, fat chance of that. And so on. But later on, Tyrie said he was revolted by the murders of Catholic men who were murdered simply because they were Catholic, not in the IRA and things like that. So he was largely an irrelevance for the 1980s, but involved in the illegal shipments of weapons and so on. So he didn't suffer what he should. He'd been in jail for years. And I wasn't even aware he was still alive. So he died. He died at the age of 85. That was Andrew Tyrie, who did a lot of evil, but did a little bit of good towards the end. Right, thank you for watching my video. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallahan7@gmail.com. Goodbye.